Mick Sinnel is a very resilient 80-year-old Irish priest who was kidnapped last year by Muslim militants on the island of Mindanao in the Philippines. He was held in captivity by the militants for a month before being released. Despite that traumatic experience and his own advanced age and frail health, Father Mick has returned to his mission at Pagadien in Mindanao, where he runs a centre to help care for children with special needs. He spoke to my colleague Emma McCarthy about his work with these children and his experience as a captive.
I worked in two parishes, in Dumalino and in San Miguel. And during all the times I worked in parishes, I came across these children with special needs and wished to do something for them, but never had the time with the pressure of parish work and the numbers that we had in the parishes. So when I was going home on vacation in 1998, I proposed to the society and to the bishop that maybe I could try and do something for them. So when I came back, I started a centre in 1998 for children with special needs.
When you say during your parish work you came across children who were suffering disabilities, physical, mental disabilities, and that you wanted to do something for them, were they to a certain extent abandoned by society at large? Were they marginalised? Was there no infrastructure there before to help them?
They were certainly marginalised. Very often they were hidden away in homes. Even the parents did not know how to help them best. When we started, we did a survey in the parish in which I was working, and we got 37 children with special needs, and we decided that was enough to start with. And we called a meeting for the parents to ask them what we could do for them. And of course, the first thing they wanted was a school. But gradually, they began to speak much longer about their child and about their problems. It took almost 2.5 hours, but when it was finished, you could almost feel a sense of relief in the room, because it was the first time they could speak about their problems to an audience that was sympathetic and understood. And the first time they got any hope that anything could be done for their children.
And now, almost 20 years after its founding, how many children do you care for currently?
11 years. Currently, we have about 60 children who come to the centre each day. We have a vehicle which collects them and delivers them after they are finished. Then there would be about 15 to 20, the number varies a bit, more who are confined to their homes by the severity of their disabilities, whom the staff would visit once a week for tutorials or therapy or both as needed. And they would teach their parents and the families how best to help the children.
Can you tell us any stories or tell us about any of the children who you've helped in these 11 years since the centre has been up and running that can give an example of how important this centre has been in improving the life, quality of life for these children and for their family?
Well, for those who were capable, we prepared them to get into mainstream education. And since we began, we have got 21 children into mainstream education. For the rest, they will never benefit too much from academic education, but we give them as much as they are capable of, and then try to make them as independent as possible as regards their own personal needs, such as hygiene, washing, dressing, toileting, nearly all the basic things, also some simple cooking and housework. Now, I suppose our greatest success was, the one that stands out most in my mind, was a child of 5 years of age who came to us having no legs beneath both knees. She could hop around inside the room and hop onto a chair, but when she was going from room to room, she had to be carried. Now, we sent her after a year to Davao to get prosthesis, and after an operation to prepare her stumps for the prosthesis, she got the prosthesis and then did an exam for the public school and was admitted to grade 2. She's now in second year high school. But she would never have had that chance unless she got prosthesis, because she wouldn't be accepted in any public school when she came to us.
Absolutely fantastic. But this is the work of the school is completely reliant on donations and the goodwill of other people. So how difficult is it for you to keep the school running?
Well, it is extraordinary. God has been very good to us, actually, since the beginning, and money has come from the most unexpected of places. Also now, because I'm celebrating my 80th birthday in December, I haven't too many more years to go, so I was able to establish a trust fund, the interest of which would help to run the program when I am gone. And the interest on that now can almost run the program.
Now, perhaps not all of our listeners are aware, but last year you were kidnapped by an armed gang from the compound of the school itself, or was it from your own home?
No, from our own home here. There's a short driveway going in front of the house going down to the street. And I was walking up and there, as has been my custom for the last 2 years, getting exercise for my heart. I do about 40 minutes each night. And I was kidnapped from there by a group who called themselves the Lost Command. I was kidnapped on October the 11th and released on November the 12th.
Without going into too much detail of an experience which I'm sure you'd rather forget than remember, would you like to tell our listeners about that experience and with the kidnappers themselves and then how you managed to keep positive throughout the whole experience? Because one thing that struck me from the reports of your comments on your release was that you were, of course, happy to be released, but you were very upbeat about the whole experience, and that struck me as being quite strange.
Well, I wouldn't say I was upbeat. Due to all that, I was amazed when I came out to hear about the coverage that the kidnapping had got and the number of people who were praying for me, not only here and in Ireland, but in many other places as well. And the prayers were certainly effective because I never had any ill effects at all from the experience. I had neither pain nor ache, cough or cold during the 32 days I was away. The first 10 days were in the swamps and things were quite difficult there. We lived in the open all the 32 days I was away with a sort of a tarpaulin over us to protect us from the rain. And the living conditions, I suppose, were very, very primitive. But you can get used to everything, and after a while I got used to it. I was quite a bit annoyed in the beginning with the Lord because I had found it difficult to pray, even though I had all day to pray, and I tried, but I had no feeling of devotion or the sense that the Lord was close to me. But after a day or two, I got that certain calm that I could leave things safely in His hands and that He would take care of me no matter what happened, whatever was going to happen. And looking back, I would say that He was certainly there all the time, yes, although I didn't realize it at the time. After the actual kidnapping itself, which was very rough, and when I got into the boat, it took me by boat first before we started hiking for about 3 hours. But there could not have been more helpful in trying to make things as easy as possible for me in the difficult situation in which we were living. So that was also a big help. And they told me when I got into the boat that I need not worry, that they would not think of killing a priest. And I never had any great fear that I was confident that the people who were guarding me would not do me any harm. There was the danger, perhaps, if the military tried to rescue me by force, that I would be killed in the fighting between the two groups.
But it all came to a good end, thank God. One thing that also struck me is when we were covering the story of your kidnapping and during the period that you were abducted and no one knew where you were and the search was ongoing, one thing that really rang through very loudly and very clearly was, first of all, the love the children of your centre had for you, because so many of them made appeals. That struck a chord an awful lot with the international community. And the second thing was how much your work and your person and your mission had affected not only the Catholics in Pagadian, but right across other religious communities. Everyone knew who you were and everyone did everything they possibly could to try and publicise your story and to pray for your release. Not only Catholics. Did this also surprise you?
Well, I attend once a month here. We have a forum for a Muslim Christian forum for solidarity and peace. And I knew the Muslims would also be praying for me. As a matter of fact, there's great devotion here to the Divine Mercy at 3 o'clock. So the Catholics said they would pray for me at 3 o'clock, and the Muslims said they would pray for me at the 5 o'clock prayer. But I have been, as I said before, I was amazed really in how the thing had the imagination or something of the people. I can't really explain that. And the number of people that were praying for me and who followed it, who followed the kidnapping and the search for my release.
But as I said before, thank God it all came to a very happy end. It seemed to have been purely for ransom reasons. Is that right?
That is correct. It made that clear to me that it was purely for ransom. The people who were guarding me said that they were very angry with the MILF, who said that kidnapping a priest was against the Quran, because they said that was all right for them to say that because they had money coming from outside. but that we have no money coming from outside. The only way we can get money to buy arms and ammunition is by kidnapping.
Moving perhaps a little bit away from the kidnapping, but not completely, when you were released, obviously your health was frail, even though you'd done amazingly well for someone who has a serious heart condition to survive all those days in abduction and on the move in harsh conditions. You returned to Ireland, as you said, courtesy of the Irish government, to spend a time with relatives and to regain your strength. And then, of course, the news comes across the wires that Father Mick is back in Pagadian. Most yeah. people would have thought, is he completely and utterly insane? And perhaps don't understand this choice. Can you try and explain it for us?
Well, this has been my work all my life, and I figure I can still work for a few years that are left of me. For as long as I can, I would like to do the little I can for as long as I can. And really, I had no way I could work anyplace else, and I don't feel there's any danger now that it will happen a second time.
So, to conclude the interview, Father Mick, can I ask you a question? What is priestly mission, or what is a missionary priest? What does mission mean for you?
Really, well, I suppose in the beginning or the early days when we came here, we were coming out to save souls. But really, it's to bring the good news, I suppose, to the people. People who have no chance of practicing when we came here because there were so few priests. Even now, the average parish here for a one man would probably be 13,000-14,000 people scattered over a fairly wide area. And some people would say the Philippines is not really mission because the people are Catholic. But I suppose the really thing is to be an instrument in the hands of God and bringing the grace of God to different people. And now, like any priest, I suppose, I have to admit that God has used me to touch the lives of many people. Sometimes he picks the most peculiar of instruments to achieve this.
That was Irish Columban priest Father Mick Sinnoh speaking to Emma McCarthy.